Hello, welcome to Spotlight, warming your heart with artistic light.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
This evening, get ready for this year's Poetry Trail. More about the Celtic noir film Catch. Some great news from the accidental author Rob Cowley. Mars comes to Peel Cathedral. And a week after guild entries close, we chat to new, or you wish, chair of the Manx Music Festival, John Riley. Remember, do get in touch with any creative artistic endeavours you might be involved in planning, hoping to create or would really like to, yes, you know it, put in the spotlight. Poetic, theatrical, musical, literary, ceramic, sculpture, drag, film, mime, social media, doodly doodly doo, all the rest. You know the address? Well, if you don't, I'll tell you. Howard Kane, with an E, at manxradio.com. Or Spotlight. Don't think there is an E in that. Spotlight, at manxradio.com. I'll get them both. I read them all. I will get back. Sometimes later rather than sooner, but I will do it. And I'd love to talk to you if you've got something to feature on the show. Let's start with the last first for a change. If you enjoyed Gaia at St. Thomas's and the Moon at the Cathedral last year, then you're almost certain to enjoy what's coming to the Cathedral in Peel this very weekend. Rosemary Clark from Peel Cathedral Exhibitions team told our own Ben Hartley Moore.
Well, this time we're having Mars, the red planet. And so we're really looking forward to a whole series of events and welcoming people to be able to come and enjoy either seeing it or participating under it.
And in terms of the sort of size of it, will it be the same kind of size as the Moon last year? Because the Moon was an impressive size here in the cathedral.
Well, actually, the original sculptures are 7 metres across, and that was too big to fit in here. So they do a slightly smaller one, which is 6 metres. So yes, it will be the same.
So a year ago, you had the Moon displayed in the cathedral, and it was incredibly popular, with literally thousands and thousands of people coming through the doors here to have a look.
We were astonished. We did know that when the Earth was at St. Thomas's, they'd had about 13,000 visitors. But of course, that's in Douglas. And it was in April, May time. So this was February and in Peel. And yet we had visitors from right the way across the island. And we topped 18,000 visitors, which we were very excited about.
Did that surpass your sort of wildest dreams in terms of numbers through the door?
Well, I mean, I know that other cathedrals may clock up many more than that over the course of the year. But for us here, it was an astonishing amount. And it was just great to welcome many people who'd never been through the doors before. And particularly as we had recently reopened after the restoration work, there were just so many positive comments about the space that we have here. And also, now that we have underfloor heating, we had it on full time for the whole 3 weeks. And it was really warm in here, which is quite unusual for a cathedral church.
And it really did capture people's imaginations. You know, you saw on social media across the weeks it was on display, you know, families, young and old, having their photographs taken. It really did capture people's imaginations. Why do you think that was?
Well, it is an impressive piece of artwork. And it does make you realise how big the Earth, the universe, the planets are. And to be able to see what we can only actually in the sky see as a tiny speck, obviously in terms of Mars, the Moon we can see more of. But to be brought up close to such an astonishing thing, because they are done from satellite photography, so it's based on what it really looks like. And it is just very impressive.
And when Mars is displayed here, doors will be open Saturday the 7th of February, and the doors will be open regularly for several weeks. There's a lot of sort of time for people to come and have a look at this.
That's right. So it's with us for 3 whole weeks and an extra couple of days. For the first week, which is during term time, people can come from 9. We will be closing in the evening, probably around 9 o'clock. But in some evenings, we will be having ticketed events. But otherwise, it will be free entry from 9 until 9. But in the middle week, which is half term, we're going to have a series of exercise classes, Pilates, chair-based exercises, parasize, and those will need to be booked. but we're having them first thing, so we're going to open at 10 o'clock during the half-term week.
It's sure to be brilliant, and I am particularly looking forward to it, as whilst Rosemary didn't actually mention it there, the opening event is this Saturday, the 7th. It features an evening of songs from the wonderful Mines Ashanti. I think that's what Gary told me to say. And alongside their popular Salty Fair, they'll also be giving the world premiere of a specially composed Mars Shanty. And if that's not enough to tempt you, there are also what are described as out-of-this-world canapes from the wonderful Philbys. Tickets, I'm told, are still available online via ticketlab.co.uk, or you can scan the QR code on the Mines Ashanti Facebook page if you like. Leave a comment as well. See you there, perhaps. Something else also happening this weekend, and unfortunately for me, the same night as the Mars launch, could do the dividing myself for this one, is the launch of this year's wonderful Isle of Man Poetry Society Poetry Trail. The project which sees the work of local poets prominently displayed in shop windows around the capital. I heard more from Membership Secretary of the Society, Roger Bloor, and Chair, Bethany DeLee Runciman.
Yeah, so we had over 50 entries.
Brilliant.
Which is excellent, and the judges, Annie Kisak and Sarah Lockyer, had, a difficult time narrowing it down to the winning ones and the commended ones. This year, normally there are 10 poems on the trail. This year there are 11 poems on the trail, and all the sites have been matched as far as we can with the contents of the poem, which is also quite fun. And so the winners will be reading at the evening. Those who can't, we've got the videos of them reading it. And this year, the entries have recorded all of them, a video of themselves reading the poem. And on each of the poems on the trail, there's a QR code. So if you just scan that with your phone, you'll be able to hear and see the poet read their poem as well.
Wow, that's a great idea. It's sort of making it more interactive, which is lovely. And the trail itself, how can people sort of find out about the trail?
Right, so there's guides and maps, and they're available at the Welcome Centre, at the library, and at the Manx Museum, and all of the places where there are. We'll also have copies of them as well. And it's also on the Isle of Man Poetry Society website, which is www.isleofmanpoetrysociety.com. And you can look at it there and see where they are and which poems they are and who's written them.
Do you get, I'm assuming on the Poetry Trail, that there are probably regulars that go in every time. Do you sort of get a nice mix of new names or perhaps poets who've never written stuff before coming forward?
We've got some new names this year, yes, and some really interesting variations on poems. Obviously quite a lot to do with the sea, but quite a lot of interesting takes on the sea and seagulls and early morning dips in the cold sea, lots of interesting things. And one on a strange creature called Lomanartus genii, which is worth reading.
And it's, well, how long has the trail been going now, Bethany? Because I'm trying to think when we first did this. It seems to have gone a few years.
Well, I didn't start initially. It started with Ruth Baxendale in the 2013 when she was chairperson. And it was in 2013, 2014. And then I took over from Ruth as chairperson. And I've continued it from 2015 onwards. I've actually lost count of exactly how many, because I think one year we did two in one year. One year we missed one. I think COVID, we had to alter it slightly. It's a bit of an institution, really. And it's just a wonderful way of getting poetry in an area where the public can easily access it. And the poems themselves, I mean, the standard this year has been really, really high. And we've, as Roger says, we've got a whole range of different themes of poems and styles of poetry. So if anybody's interested in finding out more about poetry, go just get a guide and just find them along in Douglas City Centre.
And it's lovely because it slightly reminds me of our own little version to a degree of the poetry on the tube, you know, where you go to London sometimes. And the number of times I've just been sat on the tube and you're looking up reading the endless adverts, and there in the middle sometimes will just be a lovely little poem penned by someone. And it's just a great time. You're sitting there, sort of nothing, trying not to make eye contact, and you can actually take in a lovely poem. And I think it's great when you just, it's a great way of integrating sort of poetry into society, isn't it?
It is, yes. And the launch evening that's coming up is a celebration of poetry. So we have the bards there, the Manx bard and the junior Manx bard early. And we also have all the winning poems will be spoken, whether the poet is there or on a video. I really beg thank you to the Manx Lottery Trust. Their support over many years has been invaluable and allows us to run things like this. We have Mr. David Christian is coming to, he's the chairman of the Manx Lottery Trust. He's going to be handing out the winning posters to the poets on the night. The launch evening starts at 8 o'clock, usually finishes about 9:30, and there's refreshments at the end as well. And if anybody wants to come and learn more about the Poetry Society, or even have a discussion with us about what goes on as general in the island with poetry, again, please do come along. It's always held in St. George's Church in Douglas, which it used to be opposite where Bar George used to be. This is a church with the graveyard around it. As I say, it starts at 8 o'clock, and inside the church we have PowerPoint and microphones, which makes it very easy for us to hold an evening for the poetry launch.
And the launch of this year's Poetry Trail will take place at St George's Church, 8 p.m. on Saturday, that's the 7th. It's a great evening, it really is. Refreshments at the end of the evening as well. What's not to like?
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
We heard from the filmmaker, writer and musician Dave Armstrong of DAM Productions last week, talking about his latest project, Catch, a short Celtic noir, as he calls it, film and novel. A launch for the film event for an invited audience was held earlier this week in Douglas. Dave is now wanting to take the film out onto the festival circuit, but as he explained to me, Catch is more than just a film, but if you'll excuse the pun, part of a much bigger story.
My long-term aim with the project is more than just a standalone short film, mm-hmm. which was great to do and fantastic experience and working with some fantastic artists and creatives. But in the long term is, you know, and you've known me long enough, that my aim is to hopefully see a regeneration of that creative part of the creative sector on the Isle of Man blossoming again. So proof of concept, and also from even just logistically wise, forget whether the story works, but just especially because this was shot partly on the Carfaman and it was shot in Craigneish. It's just, as a filmmaker and dealing with producers from off this island, is working on the logistics of how the heck can you do this? Mm-hmm. You know, filming on a boat, filming on a fishing boat and the little Carfaman boat and the timing. And, you know, you've got 4 hours on the Carfaman to basically unload a truckload of gear and then more or less walk half of it all the way up to the lighthouse at the top, shoot your scenes, then get back down before the tide changes and you've got to get back off again. So a lot of things like that. And, of course, game with a project like this, it's the connections and understanding, especially wanting to deal with in the future off-island producers, as all of the contacts and making sure that, you know, we talk to Manx National Heritage, we talk to all of the people, the stakeholders really, in helping the Isle of Man, I'm not saying blossom again. This is my favourite place in the world. I mean, where else would you want to be at the moment, apart from a windy isle? A windy isle like this. But you know what I mean? It's just making sure that we connect with everyone, make sure they understand why we're doing it. And, you know what the Isle of Man's like? Very cool, friendly, cooperative. Mm. Everyone wants to help, and it was a great project to do, even though, as with most projects, especially a film project, that's, you know, you always want to build a hill that's harder to climb the next time. A lot of moving parts, but a fantastic experience.
I say it was Celtic noir. How would you explain Celtic noir to someone who said, what do you mean by that?
What do I mean by that? Well, I think we all went through the phase of watching some fantastic episodes from our neighbours who probably once invaded our island from just to the north, you know, the Norwegian stuff and the dark stuff. And it's not aiming for a dark film for the sake of it, because in the full story, there's a lot of good stuff that happens. But thinking of, I suppose, a commercial angle on the type of project and the types of project that we could attract here, partly because of the topography, the weather, except, of course, being in Celtic noir, you wanted that nice, bleak, sort of dark, misty look. Over the past 10 years, you could have gone, yeah, we'll get some of that. But, of course, last year, if you remember, we had 3 months of wall-to-wall sunshine,
yeah,
which made it hard to create that sort of atmosphere. But I quite like the dark side. I wanted to make something that was gritty, a thriller, and that hopefully people will want to find out more at the end of it and hopefully encourage and use it as possibly a calling card to say, look, we can shoot this sort of project here and we can make it gritty, contemporary, and hopefully commercial as well.
Can you give us a précis without any plot spoilers?
I mean, it started off with a basic premise, which was that imagine you're on somewhere like the Kaufman, and one day someone washes up in an orange jumpsuit floating in the sea, and they have an ankle bracelet, and they're of Middle Eastern origin. And part of it's about breaking, you know, I suppose, stereotypes down and assumptions down, because obviously a story is never as simple as just that the premise sets up. And of course, I always wanted to have it shot in the Isle of Man, and the story is based around somewhere like the Isle of Man without necessarily being the Isle of Man. Because you geeks out there, I know you'll sit and watch it one day and go, oh yeah, but that doesn't happen there. And, you know, hopefully when I finish the novel version, and you're allowed to be a little bit more, have poetic license and not be too constrained by the fact that I live here. And I don't want people going, yeah, but that would never happen in Port St. Mary, would it? So, and it was from discussions with a friend of mine, a writer friend of mine, and we were talking about, because I'd had the idea for the story of this guy washing up and the dilemma of the person because of their past, as to whether they want the press and the police and everything else coming and knocking on their door. We thought, hey, Carver Man. And then, of course, because I've had a little bit of background with watchmakers, it was the suggestion, why don't... Because originally she was just going to be just a bird warden. And then eventually it was, why not watchmaker?
Mm.
So she's a reclusive watchmaker with a dark past, living on somewhere like the Carver Man, and someone washes up.
Best of luck to Dave and Catch. You can see more teasers and clips about the project on catchthriller.com. I recommend it. If you haven't got your guild entries in yet, bad news, you've left it too late. I did warn you last week, and we heard as much from guild chairman John Riley. John has only comparatively recently taken over the role of chair from Anne Clark, and I suggested to him, with an event so embedded in Manx culture for generations, it's quite a task to take on.
Well, it is when you consider how long it's been going since 1892 and probably one of the only festivals of such magnitude that's still in existence in the British Isles. So it's quite an achievement, really. And it's gone from strength to strength. There have been moments when we've wondered how much longer it continue, and then it's picked up and we've had some excellent entries, and we keep looking and seeing what new things we could bring in, what new competitions, ideas, suggestions. So we're always looking for these things.
What's your association with the Guild? Does that go back a long way?
Yes, I was just thinking about that today. I think the first time I entered the Guild was in the boys' solo. I can't remember what it was. It was something to do with ships. I'm sure of that, as all boys' solos were in those days. Yes, so I've still got the comments sheet, actually.
Did you win?
No, I don't think so. Of course, there were quite a number of boys entered in those days. Numbers have dropped, but there again, we now have four classes for the boys for different ages. I once went in as part of a quartet when I was at school. We thought we'd go in the male voice quartet. We were in our teens, so we entered and we won, much to the dismay of the competition, because I certainly remember one other quartet was the Crosby Quartet, which consisted of outstanding singers like Wally Kerfey and Tommy Gellings. So they were quite dismayed to see these whippersnappers walk off with the trophy.
And you suggested there at the beginning, obviously there have been classes, all sorts of classes, but it does evolve, I suppose would be the word, and I know it's reviewed each year, and that some classes gain popularity as they go along, and other classes, perhaps it might have been popular 30, 40, 50 years ago, sort of dwindle off. Is it challenging trying to think of new classes which might attract the next generation of competitors?
I wouldn't say it's exactly challenging. We look at it every year, and if there haven't been any entries for, say, 2, 3, maybe 4 years, then we'd put it on the back boiler, should we say, until somebody else expresses an interest. And then quite a lot of people come forward, adjudicators included, who suggest new classes we could have. And in fact, we've got quite a few new ones this year, as it's the year of the Manx language.
So there is more in the way of Manx classes?
There are, yes. There's a class where the Lord's Prayer can be recited in Manx. There's three classes for that. And there's, obviously, we always have the prayer book, but that's part of the Cranmer. We have got various other Manx classes as well. And we've also got a new one this year. Somebody mentioned that, in fact, it's the anniversary, I think it's the 70th or the 75th anniversary of the Eurovision Song Contest.
It is, yeah.
So we thought we'd try that as a class, so people can just choose a song from the last years of the Eurovision Song Contest, and either as a solo or they could be up to a group of five singing one of the songs.
Finally, let's catch up with the accidental author, Rob Cowley. His latest project was the Big Book of Magical Manx Tales, a project which encouraged youngsters to start writing stories, and then the winners were published. At the same time, as is always the case with Rob and his books, raising lots of money for good causes. And like all the best stories, it's had a happy ending.
In September last year, I ran a creative writing competition for 6 to 13-year-olds and had a wonderful response. And they had to write to some of my topics like friendship and kindness and courage and saving the planet, with the idea that we were going to get the best 20 stories and make a book, the Big Book of Magical Manx Tales, and raise funds for the children's ward at the hospital and a charity called Bridge the Gap, which is a wonderful charity helping teenagers and young adults who've been seriously ill bridge the gap back to education or back to work. And in essence, that's all it was going to be. And then just the response was fantastic. And support from Dandara meant I could publish more than 20 stories and pictures. And the book has just been fantastic.
And I've got a copy, one of the few remaining unsold copies here, the Big Book of Magical Manx Tales in front of me. It does look brilliant. And as you say, I think a combination of the fact, because it looks really colourful and bright and beautifully produced inside and out, and the amazing stories, complete sellout.
In 3 weeks. So from launching it on the 6th of December with the children who wrote the stories and their families thinking, well, I'd sell a few there. And then using Tesco and the shops on the island, 400 copies gone before Christmas. There are a few still around, but you'd have to go to either Bridge Bookshops North and South, the Manx Museum shops East and West, the Mostly Manx shop, or the Bridge Book Company, the Brook Company shop in Douglas. They have a few copies left.
So if you do want to pick one up, that's the place to go. The tales themselves, we were just saying before we started recording, I mean, weird and wonderful. That they give you a lot of heart. They sometimes make you smile. They sometimes make your heart melt. But it is just incredible. And I think you forget, don't you, when you do enter the world of adulthood, just how amazing a child's imagination can be.
You can find everything in this book. There's a huge amount of Manxness, which is lovely to see from the children. But some of their wisdom is remarkable, particularly about things like kindness and helping others. And there's even good sportsmanship, and there's amazing stories in there for everyone to read. And it does make a great sort of book of bedtime stories for parents and grandparents.
What's happening now then, sort of going forward with this as the end of this project? Basically the end of this project is nigh, so the sort of funds are going out. What's happening there?
Well, I'm timing that for the half term, so as many of the children as possible can come along to presenting Bridge the Gap with their £1,000 cheque. So we're going to go to the pod they have up behind A&E and have a presentation there. And then we're going to go through to the other side of the hospital, the children's ward, where we have been buying craft materials. We've been refurbishing. They've got a robot that has needed a new DVD player and Wii player to make it work. And they can move it out into the ward to entertain. And then we're getting some sensory toys for young children and babies. And then we're getting some overnight kit for parents who arrive, you know, obviously worried because they're coming in to a difficult situation with children into the children's ward, maybe in the middle of the night or having to go off to Liverpool. So there'll be like overnight bags for parents and children as well. So over £1,000 for the children's ward as well. And that's why I want the children there to see what their stories have helped create. Can I just finish with one line, a couple of lines from one of the stories,
please,
which I do think sums up all my sort of project in one go, in the fact that they wrote a story about going to a shop to buy their superpowers, and then they came back and said, he had to realise something. I don't need superpowers to be a superhero because he already had the best power of all, kindness.
Wise words indeed. Of course, Rob not resting on his laurels. We'll hear more from him in the next week or two. That's about it for this week, though. See you in 7 days' time. In the meantime, be good, whatever you're doing. Be creative about it. Hemo.